Hello, everyone, and welcome to Module 8 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness, with David Crow, titled Aromatic Treatments for the Nervous System. This is your host, Colleen, at the Shift Network. Just a couple reminders, if you're on Maestro and need any technical assistance, please press 5 on your telephone keypad, and if you're on the webcast, please type directly into the box, and please remember to put your email in there so we can answer. And now, it's to you. Welcome, David.
Thank you again, Colleen, and welcome back to everybody. Let's do our usual preparations for this module. First, you can open the various files, and so if you are looking at the course page, you would go to the link for Module 8, Aromatic Treatments for the Nervous System, and you can click on that. And then you can click on each of the files. The first one will be Essential Oil Studies for Cognition. This will be the first thing that we'll be looking at when we get into this module. Nervous System Therapeutics, you can click on that. Pharmacopoeia for Module 8, you can click on that, and these will just open in separate windows in your browser. Primary Essential Oils for the Nervous System, webcast questions from the last module, and then the deepening practices. These will be the files that we will be looking at today. There will be one other file from last week, but you don't have to open it. I will just reference it. That would be the article on natural dental health, natural approaches to dental health. So I hope that was clear. Some people want me to go faster and to repeat myself less, and some people want me to go slower and to repeat myself more. And so I will try to find the exact correct speed to go at that's not too fast or not too slow and just right. And when we are moving back and forth from files especially, I will repeat myself so that we can all stay on the same page. Module today should be a little easier because we're not referencing so many files. For those of you who have your essential oils and your perfume strips and your blending supplies and your carrier oils and your bottles, you can have everything ready. And a few of the oils that we will be working with today that you could have out will include grapefruit and lemon balm and peppermint and ravensara, rosemary, tulsi, and lavender. Again, that list, grapefruit, lemon balm, peppermint, ravensara, rosemary, tulsi, and lavender. These will be some of the things that we will be working with directly. Our next opening process is to invite everybody to submit any questions, comments, or testimonials to the webcast, or you can call in. And I am going to review a few of the webcast questions that came from last week. Just to give everybody a few minutes, you can press 1 to raise your hand on the phone if you would like to call in. I'm particularly interested in hearing how you are doing with all of these oils and blends. If anybody is feeling better in their digestive system from some of the formulas and some of the methods of using them, I would be very pleased to hear if you are making some progress with your digestive symptoms or anything from previous modules. If you have anything to report from the respiratory module, last week we actually had a question about what to use for a 4-year-old child with a serious cough. I gave a simple remedy. I'd be curious if it was helpful. And you can also respond in the general way to telling everyone what you're doing with the deepening practices. What have you been doing with your contemplative aromatherapy and your blending and so forth? So that's the invitation for people to submit things to the webcast or to call in. And while we are waiting for people to call in or submit new comments or questions, I'll go ahead and just review a few things from last week. There was the question about the hiatal hernia and stomach cancer, and I gave a brief answer, although I'm deferring till a future module to talk about the cancer treatment, because aromatherapy is a helpful adjunct treatment during chemo and radiation treatment. So we don't treat cancer with natural medicine. That's a general legal consideration. And we can definitely, however, give supportive symptomatic immunological types of therapies that can be very beneficial. So we'll defer to that till module 16, where we're going to be talking about aromatherapy treatments in conjunction with chemo and radiation, and then symptomatic treatment for the hiatal hernia would just follow the general digestive support type of oils and methods. And we also had a comment that came in on the webcast while we were waiting here, a testimonial that mentions that this person had a hiatal hernia and found a Thai massage therapist and was able to work it out by moving the diaphragm. And that was the answer that I gave last week as well, was that this is actually a process of manipulation as opposed to using aromatherapy. But the oils could be helpful for some of the symptomatic treatments. Some people have been having difficulty, or one person specifically, connecting with the Facebook group. This is a question for Colleen in customer service. And the breakout groups, Colleen explains this at the end of each class. So these are technical questions Colleen can help you with. Good question here. When you do a chest rub, is there a specific direction that you should massage in doing the strokes as you do for abdominal massage? And the answer is no, but there are different systems. And it, depending on what the style of the massage is, it could be this particular stroke moving from the center out to the arms, or moving the other way, or moving upward or downward. There's different ways of doing it. So I don't believe that there's any particular way that it has to be done. The most important thing is that the aromatic medicine is applied to the chest, where it's going to soak in, and it is also going to be inhaled into the respiratory system through the close proximity to the sinuses. So that's a good question there. And another comment, I have a physician friend who started using oregano oil under her tongue to strengthen her immune system and improve digestion. And whether this is actually oil or infusion or tincture, and my response is that there's a big difference between all of those, that people can take oregano tincture and people can take oregano tea, and people can take oregano in capsules. But if it's going under the tongue, it's most likely that they're just dropping essential oil of oregano straight from a bottle, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to get a one-drop dose like that. And I personally believe, as everybody is well acquainted with, that the internal ingestion of oregano oil is a very bad idea, because it is so caustic to the mucosa of the mouth, and especially putting it under the tongue like that, it's probably very uncomfortable. It's probably irritant, and I suspect that if this is continued several times a day for several weeks, that inflammation could start to develop under the tongue, so I would advise discontinuing it, and if your doctor friend needs any convincing, you can refer her to the adverse reaction files that I have posted and the various websites that I have given. Somebody would like to know whether depression and dementia, when the sense of smell is diminished, can be addressed, or whether the essential oils would still be used. And that is one of the major topics for this week. Another question, just to clarify, the two oils that were mentioned last week for cellulite in the research studies were grapefruit and cypress, and that is a very common combination that you'll see in aromatherapy literature over and over, and that study was basically confirming that those two oils in conjunction with regular massage actually do help with circulation and reduction of body fat and so forth. And I don't recall mentioning any other oils, so I would just clarify that those are the two primary ones. Another good question, are there any specific carrier oils for digestive system massage? And again, I will clarify that there are two primary considerations when we pick a carrier oil. The first consideration is, do we want the therapeutic effect of the carrier oil to be primary, or do we want the aroma to be primary from the essential oils? And the reason that we have to consider it from that viewpoint is because if we use a carrier oil with a strong fragrance, it will tend to overwhelm the fragrances of the essential oils. So a carrier oil such as Tamanu, for example, which is very thick and heavy and green, very strong, kind of earthy, herbaceous, vegetative type of aroma. This kind of oil is excellent for skincare, and yet if you were to add some of the essential oils, such as helichrysum and frankincense, to benefit the skin as well, as we have talked about briefly, these oils would be overwhelmed. Their fragrance would be overwhelmed. Their presence in the carrier oil would still be there, and they would still be contributing to the effectiveness, but you would not be getting the aromatic effectiveness because you wouldn't be able to smell those oils. So in general, my suggestion is that for the abdominal massage, that practically any of these oils can be used. You have a long list of oils in the file on carrier oils. And for general purposes, you could start with sesame, you could start with coconut, you could start with almond, and so forth. These are very common massage oils. And those will tend to have less fragrance, and those will have a tendency to give you much more of the aromatic qualities. And for the digestive purpose, I think you would want more of the aromatic qualities because we know that the aromatic qualities create a direct stimulating effect on the digestive system. For those of you who read through the extensive article of additional material that I gave last week on the 15 sub-doshas, the 5 types of vata, 5 types of pitta, and 5 types of kapha, you now know that the inhalation is the primary sub-dosha, the prana-vata, and you know that the prana-vata goes to the brain, and the brain controls all the other sub-doshas and the nervous system, and so therefore when we inhale the fragrance of the essential oils, we are activating the prana-vata, and we know that there is a link in modern medicine. We would say it's the vagus nerve primarily that is stimulated by the sense of smell, and that's going to have a direct effect on our digestive system. And so therefore, we can translate that into Ayurvedic terms, and we can say that the inhalation of the digestive stimulating oils is activating the pranavata, which is then activating the samanavata. The samanavata is basically the nerve current of our digestive system. And that's what stimulates our digestive agni, our digestive fire, and increases our appetite and so forth. But it's the samanavata that becomes blocked when there is gas and bloating, and we need the carminative effects of the essential oils and the aromatic herbs, and it is the samanavata which is stagnant and blocked whenever there are any kind of motility issues, whether there is constipation or whether there is difficulty with the various sphincters of the stomach not opening and closing correctly and so forth, and constipation, and also excessively stimulated activities such as diarrhea as well. This is primarily samanavata and apanavata, the downward moving pranas of the body. So that's a little answer to that. The answer specifically is to start with a simple oil, use it for the aromatic side of things, as opposed to one of the stronger oils that is going to be more therapeutic for the skin. Because really, for abdominal massage, we're really trying to get more of the olfactory stimulation. That would be my advice on that. Let's see, a couple more questions. I'm not going to take time to go through all of these because these are here for you to read. And am I always referring to lavender? I'm sorry, when I am referring to lavender, am I always referring to Lavandula augustifolia? That is true lavender, yes. I am never mentioning lavandin or Lavandula grosso. It does have a place in aromatherapy, but it is not as effective or well known as Lavandula augustifolia. The lavandin is actually a rather low grade substitute for lavender, which is used quite a bit in commercial products. But for our purposes for aromatherapy, we would like to have a very high quality organic lavender, of course. One of my favorites is the wild lavender, which is rather difficult to find, actually. We're fortunate because we are able to get it from a distiller every year. It's a bit of an aromatic treasure to find the real thing. Here's a good question, and I think we'll leave this after this one and move to the phone if anybody is there. With so many variables in the uses of essential oils, would it be helpful also to consider the Vata Pitta Kapha dosha of the person for whom the blend is for? And the answer is yes. But let's consider a couple of things here. First of all, if we were to get into an extensive discussion about what dosha you are, it would become very, very confusing. And then when we look at the nature of essential oils and try to apply that, it becomes even more confusing. Now, this is why I have started to introduce the subject a little bit, even from Module 1, even though we haven't focused. And so this is specifically about Ayurvedic terms. There was a file that was given where the oils were reviewed from the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course just to set the stage so that we could continue with some amount of discussion about that. And people will remember that the oils were classified according to different types of prana and qi and yin and yang and so forth. And so you can refer back to that particular file and you can start to see that the oils are classified already in a simple way according to the things that are going to be more directly effective for kapha people, for example. Those would be the oils that would be the hot spice types of oils that are warming, or the pitta people would be the oils that are more cooling and anti-inflammatory. And so we can connect the dots. Keep in mind that I am giving you a very large amount of information in this course. It's not just an hour and a half of nonstop lecture every week. It's also that you have hundreds of pages of reference material and the deepening practices to start to connect these all together. So this is an exercise that we can continue to bring into focus a little bit at a time as we go along. It's easier to look at things in very simple ways rather than trying to get into the analysis of Vata Pitta Kapha, because it's very confusing for people. And then people say, well, this questionnaire told me that I am a mixture of this and a mixture of that, but this other questionnaire told me I'm a different mixture, and what do I do? And it becomes so confusing just to figure out what the body type is that it's many times not even very usable or practical. And then when you look at the nature of essential oils, you see that it makes it even more confusing. And why is that? Well, I have explained already that essential oils have a basic nature that is very tridoshic. That means that an essential oil may have a basic cooling effect, like eucalyptus, for example. It may have a cooling effect, but does that mean that we should not use it for kapha conditions? No, absolutely not. We should use it for congestion, which is kapha. We should use it for phlegm. We should use it for kapha conditions, even though it's primary temperature is a little bit on the cooling side because it has camphoraceous menthol-like compounds in it and anti-inflammatory purposes. And why should we use it for cough conditions if it is cooling? That is a paradox in Ayurvedic medicine. If it's a cough condition, you want to use warming stimulants. Well, if you look at the respiratory file, you will see that there are indeed warming expectorant stimulants and there are cooling expectorant stimulant oils. And as we go and become more familiar with the nature of the oils, we can then classify them and say, this is a warming expectorant that would be better for a kapha type of person. But at the same time, it is universally known that if you simply breathe eucalyptus oil, that it has a decongestant effect on kapha problems anyway. So that's the introduction to that, and it's a very, very good question, and I'm going to keep this in mind as we go, and I'm going to continue to emphasize this particular language and answer this question in different ways as we go, rather than trying to make an entire new subject in the middle of this course. In the meantime, however, the reason that I gave you the article on the sub-doshas is because this system is more important at a practical level because it is applicable to every body type. And so, therefore, if we're talking about the use of essential oils, you should now know, if you did your homework and read that article, you should now know that all essential oils are directly connected to pranavata. They are far less connected to other sub-doshas, say the apanavata, which is the downward moving current of the large intestine. Are essential oils directly connected to apanavata? No. They're very indirectly connected, and we know through the studies of the digestive oils that we just completed that certain synergies applied with abdominal massage or compress can be very helpful for activating the apanavata when there is constipation. But in general, the essential oils do not come directly in contact with the colon, and they should not. And therefore, they do not have the same relationship that they do with the lungs, as I have explained several times. Now, this particular system is highly educational and very practical because it shows us exactly where the oils are working. And we do not have to worry about what is my body type. So in other words, if you have asthma, bronchitis, some type of respiratory congestion, your Udana Vata is blocked. It is blocked probably with kapha, with some mucus and phlegm. It may also have pitta, some inflammation. But what's most important is that no matter whether you are a Vata body type, Pitta body type, or Kapha body type, it is your Udana Vata, the upward moving exhalation, that is congested. And so therefore, if you study that particular article in detail, you will learn that we can classify the essential oils according to Vata, Pitta, Kapha in great detail in a very practical way that does not get us into all the confusion and complexity of trying to figure out what our body type is. And I will also continue to use this language as we go from here on, even though we're not going to spend specific time on this. I'm going to acquaint you a step at a time with these 15 sub-doshas, and therefore by the end of the course you will have a good knowledge of Vata Pitta Kapha at a very practical therapeutic level. Very good. Let's now turn it back to you, Colleen, for just a moment. I took quite a few minutes here, but let's see if anybody has called in and has anything specific to say. And if not, we'll just jump right into our course here.
Okay. I think, Beria, you've raised your hand. No.
Hello.
No, sorry. That was must have been... and not raised. Sometimes that happens by mistake.
Right. Okay.
And so that's it. There's no others with their hands raised at all.
Okay. Let me just look here quickly at the webcast comments and see if there's anything that Let's see here. So some comments and questions coming in that are very related to our course today, and so I'll just answer them in the course of the course instead. So let's go ahead and conclude just one other subject from last week that I wanted to touch on. And now I know that last week was a lot of lists of oils and very specific blends for specific kinds of health problems. And I do know that those general health concerns were addressed both in a general way, for example, a general digestive synergy, a general digestive group of herbs to help support the digestive system with vague, sort of normal everyday indigestion, all the way to much more complicated situations such as irritable bowels. Now, irritable bowels, of course, or inflammatory bowel disease, is a medical situation, and we have to approach it in a sensitive way. But the most important thing to consider here is that because of the format of this particular class, talking by phone, many times people listening to the recorded audio, you know, sometimes many weeks later, that it's impossible to give anything other than some very superficial symptomatic advice about what to do. And that's really okay, because in a lot of ways that's quite sufficient. And in many ways that's also all that is ever done by aromatherapy practitioners anyway. An aromatherapy practitioner is not trained or qualified to really do much more with essential oils other than the simplistic types of synergies and blends that have been offered so far. So even though the conditions are complicated, these preparations, these blends, these synergies, these methods of applying the essential oils, they can still be very effective. They can still offer great relief, even without knowing the exact degree of inflammation, the exact condition of the inflammation, the irritability, and so forth, whether it's in the constipation stage, the diarrhea stage. The essential oils at the aromatherapy level can be very helpful. And then, of course, we always start with the basic principle of go slowly. And I always emphasize that for more complicated conditions, please work with a trained practitioner. You know, you can easily put a warm compress on your belly without any essential oils and just see how that feels. And if it feels nice, well, then you could add one essential oil. I'm always advocating going very, very slowly, a step at a time. This is something that is perfectly acceptable, very symptomatic, very superficial, does not involve diagnosis or prescribing, but oftentimes has remarkable and very powerful and significant therapeutic benefits. A lot of times, simple treatments, simple external aromatherapy treatments, and simple herbs can actually do a whole lot more than the extremely potent and toxic prescription drugs. All right. Now, there's one other topic that I wanted to conclude from last week, and that was the use of essential oils for dental problems. And I did give you a file on this. This is an extensive article. And this article covers a lot of different aspects of dental problems, but most dental problems can be boiled down to one thing, and that is infection. It's the overgrowth of bacteria in the mouth, and specifically it is the reaction of the bacterial ecology, mostly to carbohydrates actually, that the bacteria turn into sugars, and they use it to make a biofilm on your teeth, which is basically plaque. And the biofilm, as it builds up, especially under the root, under the gum, is a source of first gingivitis. Now, gingivitis is an immunological inflammatory reaction to the presence of the bacterial ecology that's building up there. And gingivitis can be successfully treated with essential oils. and herbs. That's the gist of that particular article. Now, all dental problems at a certain level have nothing to do with, are nothing more than just restoring a healthy bacterial ecology of the mouth. And so herbs and essential oils do play a very big role in that, but of course so does the diet. Now, the other major problems that come, as we know, are dental caries, cavities in the teeth, dental decay of the tooth itself, and that can get into the roots of the tooth, and it can get into the bone underneath, and then of course the plaque on the roots of the teeth can start to cause periodontal decay, and this can become very, very serious. And the reason that it's important to consider the natural approaches is because there are a lot of things that we can do to prevent the progression of dental decay. The reason that this is so serious as a subject is because people don't know, even medical people don't know, the seriousness of the link between dental health and the health of the rest of the body. Now, it's becoming more well known. It's known, for example, that periodontal disease contributes to inflammation in the cardiac system that can contribute to heart attack, for example. There, links are now being made between bad dental health and health problems in other parts of the body, and it makes perfect sense that if you have an ongoing bacterial infection in your mouth, that it's going to affect everything. It's going to get into your digestive tract. Many, many digestive problems come from bad dental health, and digestive problems also contribute to bad dental health. So there's a strong link. And it's not surprising, therefore, that in Chinese medicine, the stomach meridian goes right along the jaw and then drops down right in front of the torso and passes on either side of the stomach. It's showing an energetic relationship between the health of the mouth, the dental situation, and the health of the digestive tract. And obviously, when the digestive system is under stress, people have to take antibiotics, the bacterial ecology of the lower GI tract is affected, but the ecology of the upper GI tract is affected as well, and antibiotics can cause side effects such as thrush, the overgrowth of candida in the mouth. So this is a big concern that we can think about and use essential oils and herbs to take care of. And we can prevent a lot of dental problems from worsening. We can reverse some dental problems. And in addition to understanding the links between the health of the mouth and the rest of the body, we should also be aware that one of the main reasons that we should take good care of our dental health is because there is so much toxicity in dental therapies now. And what that means is that root canals can lead to low-grade chronic infections that can get into the bone. Bone abscesses can cause all kinds of problems. But there's hundreds and hundreds of materials that are used in dental work that are not biocompatible, that set up long-term immunological reactions. And I believe, and this is confirmed from other researchers as well, that a lot of the autoimmune epidemic is actually coming from dental implanted materials. And it's not just dental implants, such as the titanium drilled into the bone. It's also the adhesives and the coloring agents, the fixatives, the glues, the plastics, all kinds of things that are there that can trigger the immune system and lead to autoimmune inflammation and autoimmune conditions of a variety of types. So let's just go ahead and look very quickly at what can we do about it. Well, there's a few very simple things. Let's just look at some of the things from the file Digestive Synergies, and you'll see that there was a list of essential oils specifically for gingivitis. So what we want to think about is the essential oils can reduce inflammation by having an antimicrobial effect in the mouth. Now, at the same time, we should also be aware that essential oils are irritant to the mucosa of the mouth, and that's a disadvantage. They are strongly antimicrobial and strongly anti-inflammatory, but they can be irritant to the gums and irritant to the mucous membranes of the mouth and the throat, and we don't want to be swallowing them if we're using them as rinse. But there's also the concern that repeated exposure of the teeth to essential oils could damage the enamel. So let's just follow the same basic rules of proper dilution and look at a few simple ways that we can use some of these oils. And so some of the oils that are commonly used actually in different kinds of preparations include chamomile and cinnamon, eucalyptus, clove, of course, is widely associated with dental work, and citrus oils. Tea tree is found a lot now in different kinds of mouthwashes. And thyme oil. And thyme oil, if you read the article, was actually one of the primary ingredients of the original Listerine, the mouthwash, the essential oil mouthwash. It is comprised of four different essential oils at 1% and 99% fillers, basically, alcohol and water. And I gave you a little interesting history that Listerine was originally not a mouthwash. It was a floor cleaner, and they found a brilliant way of marketing it, and they turned it into the world's first essential oil mouthwash. At least that's the first one that made it on the market in a big way. Another essential oil that has a lot of use in dental products is peppermint, and then frankincense. And I've talked about frankincense in terms of chewing the resin, and this is a very good, helpful solution for many dental problems. Myrrh is also found, and in this case, I do not advise using myrrh essential oil. First of all, it's getting harder and harder to find, and it's hard to work with. It's very sticky, and it works better, actually, in powder form. And so myrrh in powder form is frequently combined with golden seal for dental problems and for taking for mouth rinses and for throat gargles and taken internally for sore throat, strep throat specifically. And then another essential oil, laurel. Now, what do we do with all of this? Well, we can make some simple kinds of mouthwashes. We can start with water. A very simple way to do it is just to take about a quarter of a cup of water and put one, two, or three drops of an essential oil that you would like to use. And the essential oils that I just listed are a very good start. I don't think you want to put three drops of cinnamon in your mouth, but you could put one or two drops of tea tree oil, especially if there is gingivitis happening. You could put one or two drops of tea tree on that quarter cup of water. Now, it's not going to blend. It's not going to emulsify, but that doesn't matter. Just put that oil on the water and then put the water with the oil in it in your mouth and swish it around, swish it around, swish it around, and spit it out. Just see how that feels. Tea tree can be a little irritant. Cinnamon can be way irritant. Clove can be very irritant. So go very slowly if you're going to do that water approach. But you can do other things as well. And one approach that's very simple for a home remedy is that you can put the essential oils into tinctures. And so what are a few of the tinctures that you might want to use? Well, calendula is a good tincture. Myrrh is a very good tincture as well. And then you could also think about some of the tinctures instead of the oils themselves. Like you could have tincture of peppermint or tincture of thyme. And so you would like to then make a little blend with the various tinctures, and then you would like to put that in some water, and then you would like to add the essential oil. So a very simple recipe here that it's very general and it's very flexible. You do not have to follow this, but it's just a basic suggestion. 4 ounces of water, 1 ounce of tincture to 2 ounces of tincture can go into that. So there you have 5 to 6 ounces, okay, of the liquid. Now, from that, you can take out a few ounces of that. For example, you could take out 1 ounce out of that, and you could add a couple drops of your favorite essential oil to that. Now, this is a very, very flexible recipe. If you wanted to, you could actually put a whole bunch of essential oils in there. So how many drops in 5 to 6 ounces of tincture and water could you put safely? Well, since you're not ingesting it, you could probably put up to 20 or 30 drops quite safely. And it could be a mixture of something like peppermint, tea tree, the thyme essential oil. And what you could do then is just shake up the whole mixture very nicely and then just take a small amount out of that, swish it around, and then spit it out. So use about a tablespoon, 1 to 2 tablespoons at a time, and spit it out. Okay, so that's a different way of doing it, which is basically adding the essential oils to the tinctures and the water. And again, a very flexible type of recipe. Water, 4 parts, tincture, 1 to 2 parts, and then you can add the essential oils according to how much you are taking out. If you want to have 6 ounces of total mixture, you can easily put in 10, 20, or even 30 drops of essential oils, just as long as it's well, just shake it up well before you take it, and don't take too much in the mouth at once. Just take a tablespoon, 2 tablespoons, just sip on it a little bit, swish it around, spit it out. And that's going to be a very strong mixture. Anybody who's used Listerine knows that it burns the mouth. That's partly from the essential oil content, which is only at 1%, but it's also the alcohol content. Now, the tinctures will be alcohol content, but they'll be highly diluted. So this is a very simple way of making your own type of homemade Listerine, as it were. Okay, let's see. What else is there? One of the most common oils that is found for dental problems is the thyme oil and the tea tree oil. I would say that those are two of the most commonly used. And if it's too strong to use it with tincture and or water, there's another way that you can do this. And this is a way that I prefer to do it, actually, and that's to put the essential oils in with a carrier oil, such as sesame or not coconut. Well, coconut is okay. It's not the best for this, but sesame or olive oil. And this is a very famous Ayurvedic practice now that has been popularized called oil pulling. Well, what does it mean? You just take a mouthful of a carrier oil and you swish it through the teeth and you pull it through the teeth with some force so that it actually creates a little bit of suction and pulls some of the food particles out from the gum line and cleans between the teeth and so forth. And it is definitely very helpful. It's, the oil is nourishing to the gums, and the actual process of swishing it around is very helpful. And what's most helpful, in my opinion, is if you do that for 10 minutes, you're getting a huge amount of saliva mixed in with it, and saliva is very antibacterial and anti-inflammatory. It's one of the main reasons that it's one of the main components to our bacterial ecology of the mouth. And when we have chronically dry mouth, we are going to have dental problems that are going to emerge. And so increasing the flow of saliva is very, very therapeutic for taking care of all kinds of dental problems. Now, what can you do with essential oils? You can add a drop or two of essential oil to that carrier oil. And let's give a very specific recipe. How about 2 tablespoons of sesame or olive oil, and how about 1 or 2 or 3 drops of your favorite essential oil from this particular list? How about tea tree oil? Okay, that works fine. 2 drops of tea tree and 2 tablespoons of a carrier oil. That's nice. Now, keep in mind that the carrier oil is going to dilute the essential oil in a different way than if you're taking it with water. And so this is a milder, more soothing way of using the essential oils than making the mouthwash with the tincture, the alcohol, and adding the essential oils to that. You will also see in that article that there are many, many herbs that are listed, and this is also important. You can make these simple mouthwashes, use the essential oils in these very simple ways, and then you can also brush with herb powders directly. And a few of the herb powders that are very helpful for this: echinacea, golden seal, myrrh powder. You can brush with charcoal, salt, baking soda. You can brush with clay, mint, mint powder, sage powder, any of the aromatic herbs in powder form. And that's basically how these different products are made. They're made with some combination. Natural dental products are made with some combination of powdered herbs, some minerals, and a little bit of clay a lot of times, and salt. So you can make your own. I'm just giving you the general concept and the list of ingredients. All right. That concludes everything that I wanted to say from the digestive modules. Well, no, not everything I wanted to say, but everything we have time for. And let's go ahead and now move into a very important subject, which is the essential oils for the nervous system. And in this module, we are going to talk about essential oils for concentration, memory, and cognitive function. We're going to touch briefly on neurodegeneration and chemosensory disorders and what aromatherapy has to do with those, using fragrance to restore olfactory function and combining essential oils and herbal medicine for headaches and migraines, and essential oils and aromatic preparation for nerve pain, inflammation, and very specifically for shingles. And now the question comes, what is the role of essential oils and aromatherapy for this particular set of problems? Now, as you can see, when I'm saying nervous system, aromatic treatments for the nervous system, I am addressing very specific aspects of the nervous system here. We are talking very much about cognitive function and nerve pain. Those are the two primary topics of this module. This is very different than emotional well-being and uplifting our moods and so forth, but the link is the same, and that is the brain. So we have two ways that we can apply essential oils that are both going to go into the same system of channels and same organ, which is through the olfactory system into the brain. But we're going to be exploring how essential oils can work in two very different areas of the brain and the olfactory system. In this module, we will be looking at olfaction as it is related to memory, concentration, and mental state specifically. But in following modules, we're going to be looking at essential oils and aromatherapy specifically for moods, anxiety, depression, and so forth. Now, the mechanism is basically the same. It's just that we can target different functions. And the question we always ask when we start a new module is, how directly applicable are essential oils and aromatherapy for this particular subject? So when we talked about the respiratory system, I made it very clear that essential oils are a primary modality for preventing and treating a wide range of common respiratory conditions. And you know that the reason for that is because the aromatic molecules in the atmosphere from a diffuser or being inhaled from the palms or being applied to the chest or whatever are going to go directly into the olfactory system, the sinus mucous membranes. They're going to clear the sinuses. Then they're going to go directly into the respiratory cavity, the thoracic cavity, the respiratory system, and they will come directly in contact with the mucous membranes of the lungs. And you know that I contrasted that with essential oils for the digestive system, and I encouraged everybody to think more holistically about the uses of essential oils for digestive problems and to recognize that the digestive system is not a primary area of treatment for aromatherapy. It is a secondary area because the essential oils do not come directly in contact with the mucous membranes of the GI tract as they do with the lungs. The way we get around it is that we stimulate the digestive system indirectly from the sense of smell, and we use biocompatible levels of essential oils in the herbal form. And that's why I gave you that entire pharmacopoeia for you to study about the aromatic plants that are so good to prepare in very simple ways for teas, and to use those in conjunction with the essential oils to get better results than just massaging your belly with essential oils. Now, when it comes to essential oils for cognitive function, what can we say? Is it direct or is it indirect? It is very direct. And for those of you who have studied the sub-doshas, you will see that the link is described as pranavata. Pranavata is the sub-dosha of vata that has to do with the primary energy of our nervous system, and that is intimately connected to the primary prana, or the chi, or the life force of our breath. Therefore, the pranavata is described as being an interconnected system that is partly the inhalation of our breath. It is partly the nerve energy, the neurological energy of our brain. It is the ability to assimilate sensory information. And so if you are listening to me now, the sound of my voice is being converted from vibratory energy in the atmosphere coming from your computer into neurological energy in your ear. In other words, the eardrum is vibrating, and that kinetic energy from the atmosphere is being transformed into nerve current, which is flowing inward to the brain. Well, the same thing is happening all the time from all of our sense organs. Light is being converted into nerve current through the rods and cones of our eyes. Touch is being converted into nerve current. Taste is being converted into nerve current. Smell is being converted into nerve current. All of this nerve current is moving inward to the brain. That's pranavata. Now, the pranavata also is closely connected to the pulsation of the heart, which is the dhyanavata directly, and the pranavata is also connected to our mind, and very specifically to the movement of our thoughts. Therefore, we can see that the pranavata is all one system that is inhalation, pulsation of the heart, the nerve current of the entire body and all of its sensations, and the movement of our mind. This is very interesting and important to recognize that this particular system of life force is the primary way that aromatherapy works. Therefore, what we can say is the outstanding quality of aromatherapy that sets it apart from taking herbs internally and orally is that when we breathe the essential oils, those molecules of plant medicine go directly to the brain. They will not pass directly into the brain alone. There will be some absorption through the capillary beds of the sinuses, but they will also trigger the nerve endings in the olfactory epithelium, which will be converted into nerve current. And between the aromas being assimilated and absorbed into the capillary beds of the sinuses and the neurological stimulation coming from the aromatic molecules, the fragrances will have a tremendous immediate effect on the brain. So if we look at herbal medicine, what we see, when we take it internally, it has to pass through all these stages of digestion. It has to pass through the stomach and the liver and go into circulation and so forth. And it's a very slow process for the compounds to get into all the tissues. But with aromatherapy, what's paradoxical about it is that it goes immediately to the deepest tissue of the body. The deepest tissue is the brain. It is encased in bone, which is why Chinese medicine says that the brain is a sea of marrow. It's in bone. It's very deep in the body, and yet the brain is only 1/4 of an inch from the outside world. This is very important when we look at the various conditions that we're going to be treating and discussing here in this module, which are the different kinds of things that are affected when the brain is adversely affected, such as Alzheimer's, dementia, poor memory and concentration, loss of memory and poor concentration. All of the things that essential oils are now being found to be good for are in some way related to the fact that the brain is under tremendous stress, whether it's internal stress, physiological stress, nutritional deficiencies, or environmental toxins, the brain is now under a lot of stress for everybody, okay? Everybody's brains are exposed to all kinds of environmental toxins, and now this is coming out more and more. They're just normal air pollution in normal cities is full of compounds that make their way through the olfactory system into the brain and are now being directly linked to cognitive decline, neurological degeneration, and conditions such as dementia. So let's look now at what are some of the possible oils and what are some of the possible ways that we might be approaching this topic of improving cognitive function. This is a big subject. I don't think we're going to finish it today, but that's okay. Because it's not just a lot of new oils and a lot of new ways of looking at oils, but it's also a lot of new treatments. For example, we can start to think about using essential oils for scalp massage for helping our brain. We can think about the Shirodhara treatment, the warm oil cascade over the top of the head that's used in Ayurveda. We can think about scenting that oil. We can think about using essential oils on the bottom of the feet and reflexology, which has a very positive and direct effect on the circulation of the head for relieving headaches and things like that. Let's go ahead now and open the file titled Nervous System Therapeutics. It is already open, but I will mention it several times and give everybody time to get there. Nervous System Therapeutics. Nervous System Therapeutics. These are the groups of herbs, I'm sorry, the groups of oils that have different functions that are related to the topic that we are talking about. And if you will look at this file, you will see that the oils are classified into major categories titled analgesic, meaning that it helps pain, antidepressant, meaning that it lifts the mind and mood out of depression, anti-inflammatory, which we know the definition of, antispasmodic, we know the definition of, anxiolytic, that means that it's calming to anxiety, euphoric, we know what that means, nervine relaxant, it means that it helps the nervous system to relax, sedative, we know the meaning of that, and stimulant. Now, this is a big list of oils, and the question obviously is going to come, well, where did this list of oils come from, and who decided that these oils do all of these things? Well, I think that, as I have said before, we have to be very discriminating when we are looking at all the claims that are made about essential oils, because a lot of people say, these oils do this. Well, how do we know that they do that? One way we know is that we look at the studies and the research, and we're going to do that in just a minute. We're going to find out that, yes, there are some pretty substantial studies that have been done on cognitive function and essential oils, and the results are pretty good. Another source is that we look back on the traditional herbal use of these species, and we can see that in some cases that the traditional use parallels the modern use of the essential oils, because keep in mind that when people say chamomile essential oil is analgesic, there is simply no historical reference for that. Chamomile oil has not been around that long. Chamomile as an herb has been around and used and well documented, and its active principles are the essential oils, and therefore we can assume that if chamomile as an herb has been used for analgesic purposes, specifically for helping pain and cramping in the digestive system, we can then assume that the essential oil probably does also have some analgesic effect. Those are the two primary ways that we want to confirm that this information is factual, that it is not just people saying something because they think that it might do that. But as you will see here, this list is quite extensive, and every essential oil is working in a different system. This file is for future long-term reference. And as we go, you're going to learn how to start breaking down these larger groups of oils into subdivisions of categories. For example, analgesic, birch. Well, You will learn in the modules on the musculoskeletal system that are coming up that birch is a primary analgesic for muscular pain, but it's not a primary analgesic for other kinds of pain. So it has a specific system where it's working. Black pepper, also very good for musculoskeletal pain. Chamomile, very specific for the digestive system. Cinnamon, specific for the digestive system and for the musculoskeletal system. Same with clove. So as we go, we're going to start to see that these oils work in different systems of the body. Helichrysum, very specific for soft tissue injury, pain of soft tissue injury. Okay, peppermint. We're going to learn today that peppermint is analgesic, very good for headaches, okay? So we can correlate these then with the herbal equivalents, and we can look back and we can say, okay, it's true that these herbs have analgesic effects because the herbs have been used for a very long time. Now, when we come to the antidepressant department, it becomes a little more confusing because we're talking about something that is highly subjective. Now, herbal medicine can be very effective for anxiety and depression, but we have to remember that herbal medicine is not the same as stronger medications. And so when we say antidepressant essential oils, we also have to remember that the effects on the one hand are very direct. The fragrance is going directly to the brain. But we also have to remember that the effects wear off relatively quickly unless you have the oils going in the diffuser in the home all the time. So this is one of the primary concerns. We have to ask the question, realistically, will these oils actually give us an antidepressant effect? If we're depressed and we breathe a citrus oil like bergamot, will it really cure our depression? Well, I think the obvious answer, the realistic answer, the fair answer here, okay, is to say that aromatherapy is a very helpful adjunct for mild to moderate transient circumstantial depression. I think that anything beyond that, serious chronic depression, it can still be a good supportive adjunct treatment, especially if you're combining it with herbs and acupuncture and therapy and many other kinds of things. And we will see when we look at the studies here soon that essential oils definitely improve quality of life and reduce pain sensations for people and can definitely be antidepressant. But let's be honest and realistic about the expectations here. And the reason for that is because people with depression frequently are desperate to find something that's going to lift them out of depression. And so they will try this oil or that oil, direct palm inhalation, diffuser, and so forth, because they have heard it's antidepressant. And it won't work. It may just be a temporary kind of distraction. But let's look at why that's happening. It's because it's working through the limbic system, which we're going to study in more detail. And because it's working through the limbic system, it is very subjective. That means that this list of oils, ranging from basils to lemon balm to neroli, Palo Santo, there's all kinds of oils here. What oil is going to be the best for depression? I will give you the simple answer. The oil you like the most. There is no one oil here that is documented as being the best oil for depression. And that's because aromatherapy is highly subjective. So my suggestion then, if depression is an issue, you want to have the antidepressant effect, that you try different kinds of oils in different forms, in different applications, and see which one makes you feel the happiest. And the reason for that is very simple, because when we are using these oils for antidepressant effects, they are working at the brain chemistry level on the one hand, but the more important place where they are working is that they are producing a pleasurable sensation, a pleasurable feeling inside the mind and emotions. That's what you want to help you determine which of these oils are going to be best. Now, we could go ahead and we can break this down even further for anti-inflammatory, antispasmodic, and so forth, but this is a big file and we need to move on. And I'm going to keep coming back to it, and as we progress here, you're going to see references over and over again to these types of categories. You're going to see, for example, that when we move into our research studies next, that lemon balm has sedative effects. Okay, lemon balm is mentioned in the sedative category here. You're going to see that lemon balm, where else is it mentioned? And what are, I'm just scanning here very quickly. Where else do we see lemon balm? Lemon balm is also in the antidepressant effect. Okay, so when we move into the next subject here, we're going to see that lemon balm is sedative and antidepressant, specifically for Alzheimer's patients. Let's move then to some studies, and let's look at what modern scientific research is telling us. So please open the file now, titled, what is it titled? Essential Oil Studies for Cognition. Okay, that is the name of the file. Essential Oil Studies for Cognition. Take a moment so everybody can find it. Essential Oil Studies for Cognition. Now, these are studies through the medical databases. I believe it is very, very important to at least consider this scientific view. The results are not always as optimistic and encouraging as we would like to imagine. And that's because aromatherapy is very subjective. And so it's very difficult then to actually pin down a lot of the effects of aromatherapy. But a lot of the studies usually confirm that there are very good results. Now, the first topic is here is lemon balm and cognitive function. Lemon balm is a primary oil for this discussion. The really important news here is in that first section, lemon balm stimulates the acetylcholine receptor sites. Well, this is one of the major mechanisms that is disrupted during Alzheimer's disease. Okay, so lemon balm stimulates these receptors, and the study says it might make it useful in the treatment of Alzheimer's, especially when it's used as a mild sedative, to help with the nervous agitation that's associated with severe dementia. Okay, so that's a generalized statement, not a complete study, just something that a little snippet that I had in a file. Now let's look, scan through here, and look at the other types of studies. Influence of Melissa officinalis extract on long-term memory in the animal model. All right, well, a lot of these things are, they feed the herbs to rats, and they test their memory. This is an example of correlating the effectiveness of an essential oil by looking at its effectiveness as an herb. So this is not a study on lemon balm essential oil. It's a study on lemon balm tea, and therefore I would encourage everybody to keep in mind the holistic approach that if you want to enhance cognitive function using lemon balm essential oil, you should also drink lemon balm tea. So what's the conclusion? I didn't, this is a huge study, this is pages and pages, so I just cut right to the conclusion. Subchronic administration of Melissa officinalis led to an improvement of long-term memory of rats. Well, all right, that probably means that the old European herbalists were correct by saying that lemon balm is an excellent herb for students that increases memory. So science is just confirming what people have known, what herbalists have known. And then at the very end it says, taken together, it seems that the Melissa officinalis activity represents a possible option as complementary interventions to relieve the symptoms of mild dementia. All right, that's good to know about this very important herb in this module, lemon balm. And here's another one, neuroprotective effects after hypoxic ischemic injury. What does that mean? Tissue death, tissue injury caused by lack of oxygen. Well, neuroprotective, this is something we want to think about in the modern age with the exposure to all the toxins in the atmosphere. Every time we are in a polluted environment, it's going into our brain. That is the main point that I wanted to emphasize by telling you about some of the new research that's coming out, that the metallic particles coming from the exhaust of cars and industry and so forth, the heavy metals that are floating around, that are in the dirt and the dust, that are getting into the atmosphere, we are breathing them. We are breathing them, and they are ending up in our brain. The conclusion of this is these results propose the potential use of Melissa or its constituents for central nervous system diseases and as a neuroprotective agent to prevent disorders involved with oxidative stress. Now, how much of our brain is being affected by oxidative stress? Well, this is the primary cause, actually, of neurodegeneration, is that the brain is under oxidative stress from emotional stress and from ongoing inflammation, from other factors, from the environmental toxins and from poor diet and so forth. And so, therefore, they find that the brains of Alzheimer's patients, by the time the disease has run its course and the brain is examined afterwards, they find that the brain has shrunk dramatically. That has happened primarily because of oxidative stress. The brain is being cooked by inflammation. Let's look then, another study, neuroprotective properties of Melissa officinalis against ecstasy-induced neurotoxicity. Well, that caught my attention. I thought, wow, maybe meditation is actually bad for you. But no, they're talking about MDMA, okay, the actual drug ecstasy. And they have found that it causes nerve damage, that it causes nerve death. And the conclusion, Melissa officinalis has revealed neuroprotective effects against apoptosis, that means cell death, induced by MDMA, okay, in the primary neurons. So these are just examples of research confirming that lemon balm protects the brain. And so the next study, various other kinds of herbs are being studied. Lemon balm, rosemary, and sage, okay. Melissa extracts notably have been shown to directly bind, okay, this is all scientific information about how it works in the receptor sites. And what is the main point of all of this? Chronic regimes of aromatherapy and essential oils, respectfully, have also been shown to reduce agitation and attenuate or reduce cognitive declines in sufferers from dementia. Okay, that's the main point that I wanted to get across here. A lot of studies now are showing that lemon balm, among various other herbs, are being found to be highly effective for neurodegeneration and dementia. So here's another one, modulation of mood and cognitive performance. Okay, so lemon balm is very good for our mood, and it's very good for memory as well, is what this one is saying. And then how about reduction of stress after taking Melissa officinalis? Laboratory-induced stress in humans. In other words, these volunteers went in, and they got stressed out. The researchers stressed them out. And the conclusion was the Melissa mitigates the effect of stress and therefore it deserves further investigation. So we go on and on and we see that Melissa, lemon balm, is an extremely important herb and aromatherapy. Now it moves into a different topic here. Okay, now we're actually moving into the subject of aromatherapy for dementia. Let me scroll down and let me find the place and bring your attention to it. Let's just go ahead and move down to the topic titled Rosemary and Cognitive Functions. We spent enough time on lemon balm. Now let's talk about rosemary. Rosemary is famous herb for memory and concentration. Now it's getting a lot of attention as the essential oil. So let's look at the first study here, the therapeutic potential of rosemary diterpenes for Alzheimer's. Well, this is a particular extract, alcohol extract, and this is taking a particular family of compounds. This one is not specifically for the essential oil. It is confirming that the herb has compounds that are very, very good for Alzheimer's. But the next study is specific for aromatherapy, the effects of inhaled rosemary oil on subjective feelings and activities of the nervous system. Well, what do we find out? Significant benefits. In conclusion, our results suggest the occurrence of positive stimulatory effects on rosemary oil inhalation. All right, now I'm just going to go ahead and sum this all up for you because this is a lot of reading material. We don't need to spend the last part of our class reading all these studies. But I just want to point out that science is confirming that lemon balm is calmative and beneficial for the brain, for Alzheimer's patients, and helping with mild dementia, okay, and calmative even in more serious dementia. Rosemary is very good for memory and concentration. And there's a study here, rosemary and lavender work different ways. And so go ahead and read that. Let me just give you the titles just to wrap this up. There's another section, cognition and other oils. And so a study comparing the effect of peppermint and ylang ylang. And how about aromatherapy and dementia further? There's even more studies here, more oils, more ideas, and lots of things. And I want to scroll down to the very last one, which is basically lavender and migraines. And this is just to make sure that we get in a little discussion on headaches before we close up. The present study suggests that inhalation of lavender essential oil may be an effective and safe treatment modality in acute management of migraine headaches. So that's the answer for all of you who are waiting for the specific oil for treating headaches. Lavender oil is one of the best. There's others. Now, because our time is so limited, I am going to invite you to read the lemon balm monograph on your own and the rosemary monograph on your own. What we're going to do is we're going to circle back around to this very important topic again next week and spend some of next week, as we always do, catching up on this. But I wanted to give you now an overview of some of the different topics so that we could at least complete the first round of going through this module. So the primary topic, now that we have looked at some of the science, let's now discuss essential oils for concentration, memory, and cognitive function. We already have. I've introduced you to two major oils for cognitive function, lemon balm and rosemary. Very important. But let's look at a few other ways that we might put together a few blends based on the list that we have. So we could look at some common recipes for energizing the mind. Okay, now one of the things that we think about with essential oils and aromatherapy for concentration, memory, and cognitive function is, do essential oils actually stimulate the brain? Do they actually stimulate our alertness? Can aromatherapy be used to make us more alert? Does it work the same way that drinking coffee works or drinking some other caffeine-containing herb? Does it do that? The answer is no. And that's because those are completely different mechanisms where we are ingesting the herb and they're affecting our adrenal system and so forth. And so realistically, we have to say, do these oils actually help with alertness? Do they actually help with concentration? And the studies confirm, yes, some of them do. Rosemary helps to give the brain more alertness and energy. So let's look at a couple of possible formulas. So how about a very common family of oils that is generally regarded in the aromatherapy world as having mentally stimulating effects? Those are the citruses. Well, what are some of your favorite citruses? The ones that are generally considered to be more stimulating are lemon and grapefruit. And so grapefruit is in your monographs to review for this module also. The monographs contain lemon balm and rosemary and tulsi and grapefruit and all the oils, the primary oils that we're talking about in this particular discussion of concentration. So What about other citruses? Maybe you really like bergamot. Maybe you find the bergamot gives you an uplifting kind of feeling. What would you like to mix it with? Well, how about you could do, say, half and half bergamot and rosemary, because now you know that rosemary is stimulant. Rosemary is stimulant to your concentration. Well, what else is stimulant to concentration? Peppermint is stimulant. Lemon is stimulant, okay? You could combine those equal parts, peppermint and lemon. These are very, very simple blends. And then also, the basils we know are stimulant. So you could do basil, one of the sweet basils, or Tulsi, the holy basil. You'll see in the monograph that the holy basil is a very powerful stimulant of the prana vata. When taken as an herb, consumed as tea, it is considered to be a brain and nervous system tonic. Therefore, how about mixing 2 drops of Tulsi and 2 drops of grapefruit, or 2 drops of Tulsi and bergamot, something like that. So there's a few very, very simple blends for you. And how are you going to use these? Well, obviously, the citrus oils you do not apply directly to the skin, especially before exposure to UV light, because they can cause phototoxicity. The best way to use these is in a diffuser that is sitting next to your desk while you're trying to do your homework. Put these in a diffuser while you are listening to this class, and it will make the class infinitely more interesting, and you'll be able to assimilate the information through your pranavata much more easily. Well, how about massage oil? Do you think that getting a massage can help with your alertness? Well, it may put you to sleep, but how about if you were to give yourself, take a hot bath and relax, and then apply some body oils that have fragrance to it? Do you think that maybe you might be able to go back to work with more alertness? Yes, absolutely. So, again, you can think of the citrus oils. Then you could maybe even think of some of the spice oils. Of course, you'd like to think of rosemary, but maybe you could think of a little bit of ginger, because ginger is a nice warming stimulant, especially during the winter season. And especially if you are a kapha person that has more of a tendency towards tiredness and fatigue, that's more of a colder condition as opposed to being overheated like a pitta person. So just a few simple suggestions here. And we find that these oils are used over and over again in aromatherapy for mentally energizing effects. The basils are used, the citrus oils are used, rosemary oil is used, some of the spices are used, and ginger is found quite a lot, actually, as a mental stimulant. So if you were to take the ginger and put it with the rosemary and put it in the diffuser, that's excellent. How about having a little ginger and rosemary tea at the same time? That's also excellent. Okay, so these are just a few ideas. And then I'll refer you back to the monograph again to study the grapefruit. We actually have several monographs to catch up on, even a few from last week as well. But I wanted now to move into a very important use of essential oils that a lot of people don't think about, and that is that they're not only good for memory and concentration because they affect our brain positively, but they can actually be used in a specific way that enhances memory and concentration as well. So we look at the list of the oils that are known for memory and concentration, and the very famous ones I've already mentioned, rosemary, bergamot, other citruses, lemon, other lemon-scented types of things as well, like lemongrass, okay? Anything that is citrus in fragrance, orange, the spices like ginger, pepper, the mints, peppermint and spearmint. But think also of the conifer oils, and I have mentioned this, we talked about it when we were talking about the respiratory oils. Conifer oils and eucalyptus oils enhance the absorption of atmospheric prana into the respiratory system, and therefore anything that is enhancing the intake of oxygen is going to help us with concentration and memory. So now let me give you the whole list again, concentration and memory oils. The citruses, bergamot, lemon, grapefruit. The spices, cinnamon, ginger, black pepper. The citrus relatives, such as lemongrass. they're not actual citrus oils, but they smell very similar and have a very similar stimulant effect. The mints, peppermint and spearmint, and eucalyptus species, and conifer, spruce, pine, fir, and rosemary. Okay, so those are the oils that are most famous for concentration and memory, but now let's use them in a particular way. How can they be used to further enhance concentration and memory? Well, this is a very old memorization technique that has been around forever, and that is to use some sensory stimuli in association with a particular collection of data or information. And so this is basically repetition of some kind of sensory stimulation with some other sensory information. Okay, so I'll give you a personal experience that I learned about when I was in high school. And it's a very simple process of connecting information to a sound or to a sight or to a smell. Okay, so when I was in high school, I read The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings series. And I had a favorite album at that time, which was Dave Brubeck, jazz. One record. And I would come home from school, and day after day after day, I would put the same music on, Dave Brubeck Quartet, listen to this same album over and over again, and I would read The Hobbit, okay? And I would read The Lord of the Rings. Well, what do you think happened? For the rest of my life, whenever I heard Dave Brubeck, I would think about The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings books, okay? That's what I mean by a mnemonic device. That's just a amusing personal story from my ancient past, but we can use this for very specific purposes. And this is very helpful for students, and you might want to use this for yourself. You might want to advise this to a relative or a friend, and especially somebody who is maybe having difficulty with learning and concentration and memory. And so many kids now in school are having a very difficult time. And a lot of teachers are consulting with me and saying, what essential oil can I use in the classroom to calm them down and to help them focus? You can use any essential oil for this purpose, but the ones that are known to help with memory and concentration are the best. So my advice typically to these teachers is, well, use an oil that is known to stimulate concentration and memory, such as rosemary, along with an oil that is known to have a positive relaxing effect, such as lavender. Studies have shown that the combination of rosemary and lavender is very good for enhancing learning and memory and recall. What do? Well, you repeatedly inhale the fragrance of your choice while you are reading, while you are studying, while you are listening to something. And then, over time, if you do this day after day, like I did every day, coming home from school and putting on the music and reading, if you do this day after day where you sit down and you open the textbook and you smell the rosemary, eventually what's going to happen is that the rosemary will not only help your brain to assimilate more information, it will help you to recall more information, and then if you are in school and you're going to take a test, then my suggestion is sneak in a little perfume strip with rosemary, and before you take your test, breathe that rosemary, and it will not only stimulate the brain, but it will also reconnect all of that information in terms of working as a mnemonic device. Okay, that brings us to a concluding point. It is now 6:30. It is time to start wrapping things up, but I want to give you a quick overview of where this module is going. I'm taking extra time with this because this is a topic that is directly related to aromatherapy, and it is covering very, very important conditions, and we find that there is strong evidence supporting the use of these oils for these conditions. So, What's coming next is a little discussion on neurodegeneration and chemosensory disorders. That means loss of smell. What can we do about loss of smell? And then using fragrance to restore our olfactory function. And we can go ahead and we can look at the deepening practices, because I'm going to go ahead and give you all of these deepening practices, even though we haven't covered all of this. I'm going to ask you to connect a bunch of dots and do a bunch of homework, so when we come back next week that you are well acquainted with a lot of the background information. I gave you all the studies about lemon balm. Please read the lemon balm monograph. I gave you good information about the citrus oils, and specifically grapefruit, being very commonly used for concentration and mental energy. Please read the monograph. Then, when we come back, we're going to tie it all together relatively quickly and efficiently, and you're going to understand a whole lot very quickly about the use of many, many essential oils effectively for cognition. Then we are also going to talk about the treatment of headaches and migraines, and I've already given you the clue. Lavender is the best, but you also can see in the therapeutics that the oils are there, and you can also see that we're going to be talking about essential oils for nerve pain. These are big subjects. They are worth taking additional time on. Let me look now at our deepening practices file. This is something that you can move to at your own speed. Deepening practices for module 8. Let me just go ahead and read this to you and give you an overview of what we are looking for. When we get to the topic of loss of sense of smell, I'm going to tell you that from my clinical practice, I have found that aromatherapy in some cases can help to restore the loss of sense of smell, but it does not work as we might think. In other words, we would think that a very strong, overpowering type of aroma like rosemary that is very pungent, or cinnamon that is very, very pungent and spicy, very, very strong, or maybe even somewhat obnoxious, earthy, like jatamansi, the valerian oil. We might think that those kinds of oils would be the first ones that people would start to smell as they were regaining their sense of smell, but it's not like that. The sense of smell is actually very odd, poorly understood by science. And I have heard reports that actually people started to smell very subtle things first. And so therefore, I have designed a little deepening practice for you to get familiar with this particular concept of fragrance intensity. This was a question that came up earlier about, will we cover fragrance intensity? And I gave a very introductory response that was, fragrance intensity is much more important actually for perfumery, which is true. But fragrance intensity is also important diagnostically, because they're now using fragrance as a diagnostic indicator of early stages of Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and other neurodegenerative conditions, because declining sense of smell is an indicator of the early stages of neurodegeneration. Now, what I'm going to tell you is that I believe that olfactory stimulation can reverse that. Now, obviously, we have seen that certain fragrances, such as rosemary and lemon balm, are very beneficial for activating the brain. And there's another study in there I did not cover that is basically about how sensory stimulation in general can help to prevent neurological degeneration. And I believe that this is one of the very important ways that aromatherapy helps our brain, is that it stimulates it in different ways. And therefore, we can move into the topic of exploring fragrance intensity, because it is directly related to restoration of the sense of smell. So what is the practice? Practice contemplative aromatherapy. You know how to do that. Sit quietly, breathe it slowly, a little bit at a time. Feel the oils, the body sensations, observe the fragrance notes. But you're going to do it using oils that have different fragrance intensity levels, noticing when the sensations and perceptions arise. And I'll give you a very clear example. If you put an oil with a strong fragrance like Palo Santo on a perfume strip, You will smell it even before you bring it to your nose. You don't even have to bring it to your nose. Just putting it on the perfume strip, it's going to jump out at you. So therefore, just notice, okay, this is the diffusivity range. I am perceiving this, holding this 2 feet away from my nose. Now I am perceiving it even more, bringing it close to my nose. Notice the intensity level. And then compare that to something like sandalwood that has such a low fragrance intensity level that you can barely smell it even when it's on the perfume strip. So that's what I would like you to explore. Use different oils and notice their fragrance intensity. Keep a record of the oils you're using, what effects you get, and specifically notice, when do you start to perceive the fragrance? How close does the fragrance have to get to your nose? Okay, this is the basic practice to start to get a sense of different fragrance intensity levels. But again, don't overdo it. Keep in mind that if you inhale too much, you can irritate your sinuses. Next, number two, use single note oils for enhancing concentration and mental energy and notice their effects. Try using them with different methods. Like, for example, do you get a significantly different effect if you put rosemary in a diffuser or if you put it directly on your palms and breathe it in or putting it on a perfume strip? Notice the different effects from the different kinds of oils. So you may want to spend one day with rosemary. Then you may want to spend one day with grapefruit. And then you might want to spend one day with lemon balm and see how the day goes. See how those oils affect your mental energy. Then graduate to making a blend from two or three of those oils for enhanced concentration and mental energy. And number four, start using a specific oil when you're studying and observe the effects. And so start to use that method of using fragrance as a mnemonic device. Study with a particular fragrance and then use that fragrance later and practice recalling what you learned. Just that process itself is going to help you to assimilate information more. And so here's the method. Sit down, read your monographs, okay? Like, why don't you do this? Read the monograph of lemon balm oil and breathe the lemon balm oil at the same time. Then take a break. An hour later, sit down and breathe the lemon balm oil and try to remember that monograph. Well, the fragrance is going to help you. It's going to connect the neurons more. And that's a very good way to proceed for the remainder of this course. Every time you read a monograph, smell the oil, connect the oil to it. Then, finally, use specific oils for aromatherapy treatment of headaches or nerve pains. I haven't given you any specific information, but it's there in the files as general information so far. And we will unpack this in quite a bit of detail next week. Okay, so we have a few minutes. Colleen, I'm going to turn it back to you and see if anybody would like to call in on the phone or if anybody has submitted anything else on the webcast if nobody is calling. I will check the webcast if you would like to invite people to call.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, David. So if you would like to share on Maestro, please press 1 on your telephone keypad. And I'm not sure if this person, Janet, meant to press 1. I see a 3. So, Janet, I will give you the microphone for a moment. Here we go. Janet, are you there?
I'm sorry. That was an accident.
Okay.
Okay. No problem, Janet. We won't put you on the spot. And while we're waiting for people to call, I'll just go ahead and answer a couple of these things that came in. One person would like to know, because of their interest in yoga, if the 5 vatas, the 5 subdoshas of vata, the apana vata, prana vata, and so forth, are also known as the vayus or winds. Yes, they are the same. And they are also known as the 5 pranas. Okay, so the 5 subdoshas of vata are also known as the 5 vayus. Vata and vayu are the same term, just pronounced differently, and The five vatas, or the five vayus, the five winds, are also known as the five pranas. Okay, anybody calling in yet, or should I do another webcast question?
Please do another webcast question. No calling
okay.
Yet.
So we have somebody who is asking about shingles, and since that is related to our topic, I'll go ahead and give a short answer. Somebody is has a friend who is breaking out with shingles. I'm very sorry to hear that. I have had shingles from my travels to India, where I became very run down immunologically. That is the primary cause. And I was under a tremendous amount of stress during that particular trip to India. And so I have experienced firsthand having shingles as part of my studies of Ayurveda, actually. Like a lot of health conditions that I have cured naturally, I learned about them in India. Let's see here. She would like to know, can she apply some oils to stop or reduce the spreading? Yes. And then, coincidentally, this person is also going to India for several months, hesitates to bring hydrosols and essential oils for fear that they will get ruined by heat, lost during traveling, etc. Well, these are two big questions, and what I would say is you do not want to carry hydrosols through heat, because there's the risk of basically them going bad. Essential oils will not go bad in the heat so much. You just need to keep them out of the sun. Certain essential oils travel fairly well. You may want to take lavender just for general relaxation purposes, but it's also nicely antimicrobial. But of course, the ways that you can use it are a little bit limited while you are traveling. You could have, if you're receiving Panchakarma treatments in the Ayurvedic spa or clinic, you could bring a few essential oils and incorporate them into your treatment. That is one thing that you could definitely do. But the uses of essential oils might be a little limited. Another common suggestion that I make is that people take some of the eucalyptus or the conifer oils and do direct palm inhalation, or actually sprinkle it on a cloth to wear around their face, sprinkle a few drops of eucalyptus on a handkerchief and, you know, tie it around your nose, mouth, or put it into a protective type of mask to give added protection from environmental pollution. So a lot of people in different parts of the world now, they wear masks when they go out in public because the air pollution is so bad. You can just put a few drops of the respiratory oils in one of those masks, and it will increase the protection quite a bit. So that's another way that you can use the essential oils. I would just take a few. I wouldn't take a whole pharmacy, because it's probably going to be relatively limited, but the respiratory oils we're using in a mask, more direct palm inhalation, very good for traveling in polluted atmospheres. And then for the shingles, what I can say, this is a bigger subject, but let me just go ahead and mention that the floral oils are very, very helpful. For example, rose is a specific oil. It's very expensive, though, for therapeutic purposes. But geranium and other types of floral oils, geranium very specifically, but also things like clary sage, is very cooling and anti-pitta, and that's what you're looking for. So the flower oils can be very helpful for cooling nerve pain associated with shingles, but then we have a specific antiviral oil that's very, very famous, and this is why it is included in your monographs in this particular module, is because it is antiviral, and we are talking about the treatment of shingles, which is a viral condition, and that oil is Ravensara. And so please read through the Ravensara monograph, and if you would like to apply it, use the Ravensara oil in a carrier oil. And here is where you can use some of the more medicinal carrier oils, like rosehip seed oil would be very good. Tamanu oil would be very, very good. Don't worry about the fragrance so much. You're going for the antiviral, antimicrobial, anti-inflammatory effect of the Ravensara oil itself. So that would be the very short answer to the big subject that you are asking about already in this module. And that is, treatment of shingles means floral oils. It means rose, it means geranium, it means other floral oils, clary sage, and it means antiviral, meaning Ravensara, and it means medicinal carrier oils, such as tamanu and rosehip seed oil. I hope that's a short answer to get you started with treatment. You can also use hydrosols. Your friend can use hydrosols, the cooling floral hydrosols used as compress over the shingles. The problem with shingles is that it takes time to run its course. What you want to do is just shorten it. And if it has completely run its course in a month, it's great. And if it doesn't come back, that means that the treatment was even better. And if there's no lingering pain, that's an excellent result. So I am going to delve into this very important treatment even more next week, because the essential oils can be very, very helpful. Okay, I think it's about time to sign off, unless, Colleen,
yes,
somebody has raised their hand.
Yes, we do have Arpita. Go ahead, please, Arpita.
Yes, thank you. Hi. So I was interested in the homemade natural Listerine. And so it was thyme oil and eucalyptus oil, and it said menthol. And would that be, would we use peppermint for that, or is menthol its own oil?
I'm sorry, what are you referring to? Something that I said, or are you looking at a file?
It was in a file, the mouthwash that, looking at the formulation of Listerine and using essential oils.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you are looking at the article that I gave on dental health.
Yes.
Okay. I would have to open up that file specifically, and since we're almost out of time, in order for me to find exactly what you are referring to, are you asking what exactly is the formulation of Listerine? Is it menthol that is in Listerine? Is that your question?
No, it says on your file that menthol is in it. My question is, if we were kind of imitating this formulation with essential oils, would we be using peppermint instead of menthol? Is menthol chemical component?
I see. I understand your question now. You would be using peppermint essential oil. You would not be using menthol.
Okay. And
menthol is an extracted compound from different types of essential oils like peppermint. Peppermint is very high in menthol, but menthol is actually a crystal. Okay, it's a crystalline substance that is extracted from the peppermint essential oil, and so it is even more concentrated than the peppermint oil itself. So, to answer the question, you use the peppermint essential oil. Okay, and you had one other question.
Yeah, in the part of the same question about the Listerine. So, the other thing that was listed in the formulation was methyl salicylate. And so is that an extracted compound that is from an essential oil?
Yes. That is from wintergreen oil or birch oil. And wintergreen oil and birch oil, when we study them in the musculoskeletal modules, we will learn that methyl salicylate is almost entirely the entire essential oil. It's something like 97% of those essential oils. So originally, the formula contained wintergreen oil, and now, undoubtedly, it's just synthetic methyl salicylate, which is a very good reason to not use it. But that would originally have been from either birch oil or from wintergreen oil.
Okay,
I hope that answers all the questions that you had, and thank you for asking good questions, good specific technical questions about the formula, and unfortunately, it is time to sign off. I have reviewed the deepening practices for everybody. I invite you to do them. We will pick up with more of this very important topic next week, and I will invite everybody to join the breakout groups where you can get further information and share personal experiences and testimonials with your fellow students. And with that, one more thing, I guess, before we close, and that is if some of you are calling in and didn't get a chance to ask your question on the phone, Colleen will leave the webcast open for some time, and you can just go ahead and type it in, and I will answer it by completing the file as I do every week. And for those of you who did not get your questions answered specifically last week, but they are on the file, just you can find the answers there posted. Okay, so with that, I will say good night to everybody and wish you a very wonderful week of aromatic studies. And I hope that this is very satisfying, practical information for you. Read your monographs, but now read them while you are also inhaling the oils and see if that helps you remember things better. And do the various deepening practices, read the various files, and I will talk to everybody next week. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Colleen, and say thank you again for hosting the call, as always.
Thank you so much, David. Okay, until next week, take care.